Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Slapcast. This is episode 9 of our 2023-24 coverage. And you might be wondering, why am I not hearing the vivacious vocals of Gage Reynolds? But he is on sabbatical right now, and so we are still making do without him right now. Today, I will be the host. I am Ethan, and I'm also joined by Reese. How you doing, Reese?
I'm good.
And Josh, how are you doing, Josh?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm trying to fill the humongous shoes that Gage has left us. But yeah, I'm excited for what we've got today. So with everything that's happened this weekend, in this week so far, I guess, I think it's important that we take the time to reminisce of stuff in the past. I got a little thing like Gage usually does, but how Belgian church bells once rang as Chelsea fans sang the name of the iconic Eden Hazard. How Man City now have slipped twice somehow and ended a five-year record. And how Norwich were great by saying things straight that sometimes the signs are harder to spot. So first of all, I know, thank you. So first of all, in recent news, I think it was a few days ago, it dropped that Eden Hazard, the Premier League iconic Chelsea player, has retired at 32. And love him or hate him, he was there for like a good chunk of our childhood, or not really childhood, but just getting into the league. So yeah, 32. Quite young.
He was a great player. He's a great player. He always terrorized us and played for our rivals, so I don't like him personally. And
right.
His career really ended kind of poorly. Obviously, the move to Real Madrid didn't really work out. So
right.
I'm not really going to miss him, but I definitely understand the feeling from Chelsea fans and admirers alike. He was a huge player, right?
Yeah.
He's the man who technically won us the league.
It's true. So it's kind of mixed feelings over here. I know if Gage was here, he would be laying into him right now, but you can't deny how much he's contributed to the league. And, you know, obviously he didn't finish his career the way he wanted to at Real Madrid. So 32, still young. Still had maybe a few more seasons, but it just didn't end up working out that way. But next we've got that I mentioned, we'll talk more about it obviously when we review the match, but City have lost twice now, which ended a 5-year record of losing two consecutive matches. The last holders being, or the last people that they lost to consecutively being Leicester and Palace. Show respect.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And lastly, Norwich were for World Mental Health Day, they released a great video that I think it's important to note about how sometimes it's harder to spot people who are dealing with mental health issues. And we all saw it and we were really impressed. So please reach out to someone if you need help in any way. And so with all these, you know, reminiscing and things like that, I asked the guys to kind of think back to when they first started watching, maybe not, you know, the first couple instances, but like, I have a few questions for y'all that before I get into, I'm going to ask Josh the question of the day.
So we are moving away from football questions, at least for this week. So this week's question of the day, back to food, because it's always football or food. What is your favorite dessert?
Ooh.
Olivia, I like chocolate things. I don't really have a preference, but yeah, I'm a chocolate boy through and through. Chocolate cake, chocolate ice cream, brownies.
Chocolate pie.
Yes, chocolate pie goes crazy. I think it was someone random used to have like a Hershey's chocolate pie that you could buy. Like this was like a fast food chain, but they sold these. And I don't remember who. Maybe it was Brahms, because I know they have like a little grocery store, but those went nuts.
Mm-hmm. I kind of like everything, but the thing that stands out to most is I know not a lot of people would agree, but I love cookies. I love chocolate chip cookies, icing cookies. For the longest time during my birthdays, I would get a cookie cake mm-hmm. with some good icing. And give me what's
underrated, because they're always there, but they're. It's hard to make like a great cookie, but like it's hard to screw up a cookie. So they're just always good.
Yeah. And there's a lot of debate over like, do you like crunchy cookies? Do you like gooey cookies? And I'm like, I like all. I'm an all around guy.
All cookies. My mom makes this thing. It's like a better pumpkin pie. It's like pumpkin pie, but with more sugar in it. So it's like the graham cracker layer. And then it's got the pumpkin, but then it gets crazy. It's got like a cream cheese cheesecake layer and then Cool Whip on top. It's so good. It's just like a better, it's like a pumpkin cheesecake thing. It's so good.
I need to try it because I love pumpkin pie.
I love pumpkin. I'm a pumpkin spice guy. I will drink my coffee black the rest of the year, but when September 1st
comes. So true. Literally, I drink my coffee black, except right now I have Starbucks pumpkin spice Keurig cups in our kitchen.
Yes, that's the way to do it.
Shout out to our roommate Jacob. But all this talk of dessert is making me hungry, and I haven't eaten dinner yet, so let's calm down. But going back to before, I almost ignored the question of the day just because I'm getting used to hosting. Obviously, I'm not used to it. Gage is our host as usual, but going back, like the subject, I've asked the guys to think about a few questions that I sent in on, you know, stuff of the early days in soccer, you know, coming from a Texas where the other kind of football is more popular. It's easy to, or it's fun to think about how they got into the sport, unlike, you know, over in Europe, or I guess everywhere, you could easily just be like, it's my hometown team. So the first thing I asked them was, what is the earliest game / season you can clearly remember?
I broke this into two because the earliest game I can remember was, I was in sixth grade. That's what kind of got me started in the soccer. It was the 2012-13 season, and Liverpool played Man City. It was like 2-2, and Suarez scored like an extra time winner. I didn't really understand the significance. I just knew that like people in my class were talking about it, and it was like fairly entertaining. But the first like league I remember was the 14-15 season. Like, but right before that, the World Cup. So I would watch games like intermittently between those 2 years, and then I got really into it during the World Cup.
Yeah. Speaking of the World Cup, my earliest game is probably the USA Belgium game from that was the 2014 World Cup, right?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. That game, I mean, that was the Tim Howard craziness game. I wish we had gotten something out of it, but yeah, that game was crazy. The other answer I have, because I tried to find a season as well, would be 15-16. For obvious reasons, but I think that was the first season I really like started watching, and specifically the North London Derby sticks out. I think the second game, that was the Batcane goal, I think. Also Ramsey like backheel flick thing. I don't know. That game was good. It ended in a draw as well, but yeah, I remember that season pretty well.
Yeah, that's an iconic game for sure. With me, I also said the 15-16 season. You know, I've mentioned multiple times when people ask, you know, how do you get into being a Crystal Palace fan? And I'd mentioned, you know, slightly watching the game where we beat Brighton to get promoted, or not get promoted, but move on to the championship playoff final. But the first game I remember clearly, well, I remember the season well because it's when I think I watched the tail end of the City and Palace game, and Kelechi and Iheanacho scored the 90th minute winner. But then the next, like a few games later, Palace beat Newcastle 5-1. And that was a huge result at the time. I think it was our biggest result in the Premier League. And I only watched it all the way through because at the time, I think Gage and I, for sure, I don't know about you guys, but we were really into the True Geordie videos and how he would get so upset at Newcastle. And so for some reason I watched that whole game, but yeah, I think that was the first season I had started like watching more often than back then before that. So this leads into the other question. What was the first soccer kit you got?
I don't remember which it is, but it is either the Porto jersey that I've shown on the podcast before, that blue and white's like super simple, or Spartak Moscow one. I don't remember which I got first, but then obviously you can see my collection has divulged into madness.
Yeah, a resident jersey guy.
Found a Marshall Islands jersey.
Of course you did.
Only official country without a national team, and they're trying to sell jerseys to start up a grassroots program.
See, I didn't even know that was a place. So I feel like you're just making these things up and finding the random stuff. But
so they, if they were a nuclear test like base in World War II that the U.S. used. So they would like base the bombs and the planes there, and they would go test them like miles and miles away. And so like very small, tiny country. But yeah.
The difference between me and Gage also is I know Gage would be like, oh yeah, I know them.
Because
he's the encyclopedia.
I remember my first kit really well, actually, because it was a birthday gift from y'all.
Yeah. I saw the picture earlier.
The Mesut Ozil 11 before he changed to 10. Mesut Ozil 11 home kit. I believe it's 16-17 season.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a birthday gift. He was my favorite player at the time. We actually share a birthday as well. Yeah. Kicked off my Arsenal. My Arsenal kit journey.
Yeah. This is also from the 2015-16 season, but I had bought, it's the home version of this. This is the, I think, either third kit or away kit, but I had the home version of this season's kit. And I just remember never wearing it because I was a lot bigger than I am now. And Macron is just not kind to those with curves and whatnot. So you never really saw me wearing it, but I do have a picture of me wearing it, and I've got my little scarf on too. And I was a young boy. I was into the game early on. I was innocent before the horrors that were brought upon me of being a Palace fan.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is kind of a good segue into the next question, but I actually got the new EA FC today. And so I'm looking forward to playing that with y'all. But what was the first FIFA y'all played? And this is incredible because this is probably how we got more into the game and how we got closer to each other.
So
yeah, you go, Josh.
Mine is like multi-parted too, because I feel like there's stages to it where mm-hmm. you just played kickoff and then slowly like divulged into the madness of career mode. So FIFA 13, I think I played for like a year and a half. I got it for Christmas 1 year. And then Gage got a PS4 when we were in like eighth grade, and we would play kickoff all the time at his house. And then FIFA 15 is when I like got super in the career modes and got like really into it.
Actually, very similar answer for me. I think I've told the story, so I'll do the abridged version. But before I was actually watching soccer, my older brother and his friends, who is also my godbrother, and you know, we're all close family friends, right? So they're my friends as well, but they're his age. They were all playing FIFA 13 and they had three people, right? So they want to do 2v2s, but they only have three people. So they invited me to play, but obviously I wasn't very good. And the only one nice enough to actually want me on their team was Bobby. Shout out Bobby, who's been on the show. And of course, as you would know, if you've listened to an episode with Bobby on it, he's an Arsenal fan. So that's kind of how that started. Kind of same story, Josh. I only played with them when we were doing 2v2s. The first one that I played like on my own 1v1 kickoff style was the FIFA World Cup like disc edition, because they used to do their own disc. And it was the 2014 one. And then, yeah, first career mode, FIFA 15. So very similar.
That game was so much fun. I haven't thought about that. I mean, I think about that game like when it's a World Cup. Like,
the World Cup FIFA 14 might be my favorite FIFA.
I think 15 would be my favorite, but that would definitely be like a close second or third.
Yeah. Speaking of 15, I recently went home and got it so I can play it. And it ended up being my first FIFA as well. I have a good memory of, obviously, I had seen a little bit of a Palace game back in 2013, but in eighth grade, I sat next to Josh and he told me to download the FIFA 15 mobile app. And so I was playing Ultimate Team on the phone, and my starter pack had a Crystal Palace player. And I thought that was really cool, and it made me want to get into it more. Shout out to Brett Hangeland, who is from Houston, Texas, randomly. But yeah, after that, I just started getting them every year, like I'm sure we all have. So And then lastly, I thought this question was interesting. It's, if you could bring back any player from when you first started watching to the team now, who would you want back?
I have two answers for this. One, the first answer is just, in his prime, he was one of the best players in the league, and that's Mesut Ozil. He was absolutely phenomenal. If Giroud had been able to score at all, we might have had a chance back in 15-16, because somehow Ozil registered the assist record despite Giroud blanking in like 15 matches in a row or something stupid. The other answer is more tactical, and I think the player that would fit best into our current system is actually Aaron Ramsey. I think he would absolutely kill this advanced eight role that Havertz is playing right now.
That's a good answer. I knew you would say Ozil, but I didn't know if you'd had another one lined up.
I have mine also split into two. I have a retired player and then an active player. So my retired one is Wes Morgan, just because I love him, and he was our captain for so long.
Yeah.
And he's just a unit back there and was amazing. Active player, I would love to have Mahrez back, especially last season. Like, if we actually had a winger last season, how different we would have been. But Mahrez is 100% who I would bring back if I could bring anybody active back.
This isn't a hot take by any means. It's not a hot take by any means, but Mahrez might have the best first touch in world football.
I don't think that's a hot take. I would agree with that.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think it's a hot take.
Oh, the videos of some of his touches are absolutely insane.
Yeah, I mean, literally when he joined his team in the Saudi League, he literally had one like in the first match.
Yeah.
Yeah, or it just like looked like it just duct taped to his foot.
Yeah. So this is, I also had like multiple answers just because I could easily be like, I want Zaha back after he just left. But in terms of like going back to like the first season I started watching, considering the fact that we're so skint on wingers or just anybody in general at the moment, I was thinking the likes of Bolasie.
Yaniak
Bolasie, shout out Josh. But I was also thinking like in terms of like leadership, and I do think we have good leaders in the team, but they're still young. And so I would bring back someone like Mile Jedinek, who obviously is not a player anymore. He coaches on the Tottenham board right now. But yeah, just someone who brought us up to the Premier League. He was our captain when we got promoted. And I think he left Palace wrongly. Not him, but Pardew willing to sell him, even though he was our main captain and whatnot. So I would definitely bring him back if he was still a player. But
I thought you were going to say Kabay.
You know, I almost did say him, but just because he was so... Honestly, that was probably the transfer that like certified that we would be in the league a long time, because that was such a big name signing at the time. And I think it was what we needed at the time, because we were really lacking in midfield. So I did think about him for a second, but I think that was a little fun segment to kind of reminisce on everything, considering the likes of players that we know are started getting into the sport with. I started retiring recently. A lot of big names retiring recently, but let us, first of all, you will hear from Gage at some point in this episode. He will be sending us videos of the segment and his thoughts on the Spurs Luton game, which we'll get to right now.
What's up, guys? It's me again. Just going to drop in and talk about the Spurs Luton game real quick. I don't have too much to bring up. Really, one of the big points I wanted to make was how much of a difference maker it is to have clinical forwards in positions where they can score. I think we saw in this game Richarlison. I mean, the Spurs could have been 3-0 up in 6 minutes. Richarlison had two grade A chances, one at the back post and then another where he was running onto a through ball. Probably should have scored both of them. I think he's kind of running out of time a little bit here. We can talk about that a little bit more later, but yeah, I'm not too thrilled with where Richarlison's at. And then Porro had another grade A chance after some lovely interplay with Son and stuck it wide, tried to go near post, didn't really work out for him. Having clinical finishers in that department would have been such a major thing for this game, because I think it's safe to say, and some would say this is crazy, but I think it's safe to say that if Richarlison puts those two chances away, or Porro puts the chance away, then, you know, we're not in this situation where Bissouma ends up having to get sent off, because he feels like he has to force the attack late on in the first half, and we're getting frustrated and trying to find passes that aren't there. You know, I think a lot of times that's what happens when you're trying to break down a low block. Teams just get frustrated and try to force it. I think every team in the league probably is susceptible to that a little bit, maybe except for Man City, who are the best team in history against the low block. So, yeah, the Bissouma thing was silly. The guy has a ton of credit in the bank, so I'm not going to go too crazy on him, but it is silly. I don't understand why, if you're on a yellow, and don't get me wrong, him being on a yellow was fine because I think he took a tactical foul to stop a 3-on-3, you know, possible counterattack for Luton. I think that's fine. What I don't think is fine is breaking into the area. Well, not even the area, actually. He's on the edge of the area. So breaking into the attacking third, not even in the penalty area, and diving, essentially. He wriggles through a tight space, and the commentator even says it. Like, well, there's a lot of Luton players in the vicinity, and he kind of works his way through, but there's no challenge. No challenge comes in. Bissouma hits the deck like a card dealer. So, yeah, I think not the best move by him. He's going to miss the Fulham game Monday of next week, and then, or well, I guess Monday of 2 weeks from now when you're seeing this. But the frustrating thing about that too is that he goes back to 4 yellows for the season, because the yellow that he received stopping the counterattack actually gets upgraded to a red and no longer counts as a yellow card. So that means he's going to be back against Crystal Palace on the Friday after the Fulham, which, what the hell is that, by the way? We're playing 2 midweek games at once. Pretty insane. And then if he gets a yellow card in that game, then he's going to miss the Chelsea game through accumulation. So it's pretty dire straits for Bissouma right now as things stand. But I'm not too worried about it. I mean, the reality is he's going to miss another game because there's no way he makes it till after Christmas on 4 yellow cards just because of the role and the way he plays. So not too sure about that. I'm interested to see what the system will look like if, you know, Højbjerg is going to come in. I think he will. Last time Højbjerg started in that role against Fulham in the Cup, it didn't go well, but also most of our starters weren't playing, so you have to give him credit there. We'll see. I think it's a big, big moment for Højbjerg, especially because, you know, Bissouma's going to leave in January, too, for African Cup of Nations. And Mali, I don't think, are expected to go too far in the tournament, but just the travel, the constant wear, the possible injury situation as well, I think this is a good test to see whether or not Højbjerg can fill that role and whether or not, truthfully, we need to shift him on in January. So I think that's a big thing. The goal, of course, Mickey van de Ven getting his first goal for Spurs. The Planet, as I've decided to start calling him, because he just moves so gracefully. It's like he's orbiting. It's incredible. And he's huge. really good stuff from Mickey van de Ven. Great finish, to be fair. Madison, a short corner, which I have been critical of Spurs for this season, but a short corner paying off. And if we can do more things like that, the quick, incisive movement, that's what I think needs to happen on a short corner. None of this nonsense where it's just very, you know, pensive, very, there's a word I'm looking for and I can't quite think of what it is, but you're just sitting on the outside of the box, you know, kind of contemplative. That's kind of what I was thinking. No, this quick, incisive passing gets the ball through to van de Ven, and I think that's great. Yeah, a great bit of play by them. So I won't take up too much more of your time. This is actually recorded the morning after the guys recorded the show, so I'm actually about to head out and head to work. So yeah, shout out to me on that one. But figured I'd stop in and say a word or two on my beloved Spurs. So I'll hand it back to the guys now. I'm sure they've got some comments and some thoughts, but yeah, hopefully you guys enjoy the episode, and I'll be back with you next week or the week after if we don't end up doing an episode for the international break. So see everyone soon.
So yeah, guys, what do we think of the Spurs and Luton game?
Tottenham's finishing was woeful, but that was not kind of my big takeaway. It just kind of looks like one of those games you have to kind of grind out against a bottom of the barrel team. But Luton,
they had a red,
but even before that, their finishing was awful.
Yes, if they could finish, they would have won by like 5.
Yeah, they should have been 5-0 up within like 10 minutes. But yeah, I will say, Luton, when they – I said it last week or the week before when they won. When they press, they actually look very good, like very dangerous. And I think they signed Andros Townsend today as a free agent. And I think he's going to – hopefully he can add something to help spark them a little bit, because when they pressed, they were actually like, yes, they were out without Eve Bissouma, who's been crucial to their success this season. But when they press, they look like a different animal.
Yeah, I'm slowly becoming more impressed. I was really down on Luton when the season started. I just think they've had a lot of quality, but they're definitely playing more aggressive and attacking minded than I thought they were going to. And I think it's good. I think that's actually something that maybe more teams around the relegation should do. Obviously it's riskier, but I think the risk reward, if it pays off, is just so huge. And yeah, I mean, their press is looking pretty organized, and I've been impressed as well. They're creating chances too. Like, I think obviously Tottenham had a lot of chances that they missed, but Luton had a couple like high quality chances mm-hmm. as well that they needed to put away and didn't. So, I mean, in the end, I think in the balance of everything, Tottenham definitely deserved to get away with a win. They just kind of had to grind it out because of poor decision making from Eze Bissouma, but you know, it just happens sometimes. I don't really think it's that big of a deal. But yeah, I mean, I think it's great for Tottenham to get the result, but honestly, more takeaways for Luton in this game for me.
I think the only concern I would have with Bissouma is that he's been, I don't know if he was what they said, if he was the leader in yellow cards the past three seasons, or has been top three in yellow cards the last three seasons. That is mildly concerning.
Well, if you're going to get a yellow, don't get it for diving.
It was an awful dive, too.
Yeah, it was not bad. Not even
close to kicking him.
Yeah, if you're going to get like a tactical yellow, you know, do what you got to do. But yeah, getting sent off for a dive is just really unfortunate.
Because the first one wasn't even a tactical yellow. It was a pretty rough challenge.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, he's been so integral in that team so far this season. So it'll be interesting to see how they deal without him next week. But let's go back to Luton real quick. So obviously they've gotten a really good win against Everton earlier in the season. Then they got a really harsh loss to promoted team Burnley as well alongside them. So they keep improving, like y'all say. Who do you think that will be their next win?
I don't know. Let me pull up their fixture list. I don't actually know who their next fixtures are.
Right, because
bad.
Yeah, they've got a lot of tough fixtures left. In the first half of the season, at least. It's like they are improving, but who's gonna bend over for Luton? Honestly.
Oh God, I would say.
What are the fixtures? I can't pull it. I can't find
it. So they have Forest this weekend, which maybe. Then they have Villa, Liverpool, United, Palace.
United, answer.
Brentford, Arsenal, City. And then they have Bournemouth, Newcastle.
I'm committing to United. I'm not even kidding. I think out of all of those, United might be their best bet.
It's a home game for Luton, too.
Was Palace before United or after?
After.
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 Go with United. I'm just saying, United are weird, man. And I just think that other teams are more consistent than them, at least.
I'm going to go with Forest at the weekend.
Okay. Instant response.
My second choice would be Bournemouth on December 16th.
Bournemouth after United?
Yeah, Bournemouth. United is...
Gotta go with United.
November 11th.
Ran on Man United's downfall.
I am.
I think a lot of people are at the moment, so nothing new there. Spurs still undefeated alongside Reese. What do you think?
I mean, it's great for them. And, you know, you got to take your wins as you get them, even if you got to grind a couple out. And that's how we were last season. You know, we had quite a few results where we just had to grind out. I think at some point, because I do think some of it may be new manager bounce. I think some of it's also momentum. I think they have to keep it going as long as possible, because I think the moment they drop points in a game that they probably shouldn't, it might spiral a little bit. I don't see them. I think they're going to get top four. They've been good enough for me to get top four in the very least. I could see them even pushing for top two, but yeah, I think they'll start dropping points. Maybe I'm coping, but I think some of their results may be suggesting it's not completely sustainable, maybe suggesting there's some cracks. And obviously, you know, there's the Liverpool where there's also luck involved.
Yep.
And
the Sheffield
game. Yeah, the Sheffield game. I just think at some point they're going to start dropping points. But I mean, credit to them. They have to maintain it as long as they can, for sure.
Right. Obviously, Gage, super excited with undefeatedness still. Feels like a good rivalry going on between the North London Derby teams right now. So,
if it somehow stayed a title race between the North London Derby teams, I think I'd actually be happy with that. I think that would make me really excited.
It would be fun for sure.
Yeah.
Even though you wouldn't like the pressure, but.
Yeah.
I think Tottenham have a very, very good run of games for like the rest of the season until they hit April, where they have City, Arsenal, and Liverpool 3 weeks in a row. Which, if they continue this, which their schedule is not, it's pretty favorable from the craziness, especially with the teams that will be around them if they continue this form. Mm-hmm. That'll be very interesting to watch this season and see how they, if they can continue to build.
Right. Plenty of moments where Tottenham have seemed fragile, but still continuing their unbeaten form right now. So let's move to a team that Reese noted really weird a second ago when Man United ended up coming back and beating Brentford in extra time.
Boo.
Boo. Yeah. Before that, they had Galatasaray in the Champions League, which saw Højlund get a double. And Casemiro receive another red. And it's weird because I feel like saying McTominay got a brace this weekend against Brentford is weird because he had a brace back in Leeds, or when they faced Leeds in 2020. So why is he not playing striker?
He used to be a striker.
Is that true?
Yeah, he in the youth academy long time ago. But yeah, he started off his youth academy journey as a striker.
Wow. I saw something that said a coach who changed it from a striker to CDM is just like sitting in a corner, just like crying himself to sleep every day.
Yeah.
He's not sitting. Well, he's probably sitting in the corner of his house because he's probably unemployed.
Yeah.
So really weird game. I remember at one point talking with y'all about how Brentford is beating United, which was no surprise as it's been something that's been talked about all season long. Yeah. And then come to find out after I finished watching the Palace game and look at the Premier League app, I see that they have come back and scored two in the last few minutes of extra time. Do you think that this will be the Kickstarter?
No, I think they're going to lose their next game. I don't even know who they have, but I think they're going to lose their next game.
It's Sheffield.
I think they're going to lose. I think they, I personally think it may have been better. Just in terms of their own mindset to lose this game, because they're going to have such a high, and not if, when they lose their next game, it's going to hurt so much more mentally. And I wrote down a specific phrase because I was thinking about this, and obviously I'm a United hater, so maybe I'm just being a hater, but I think the feeling I get from United is that they feel like because of their history, they're entitled to be winners and they're entitled to win games. And so when they lose, they're like throwing fits, not at like the refs or anything, but you know, they get very, very mad at their own players and all this and the Glazers and all and everything else. And, you know, fair enough, be mad at your owners. They're just not that good anymore. Like they need to realize where they are and then start from there instead of pretending to be like they're under Fergie and then being mad when they lose, right? I don't know. That's just the feeling I get.
No, you go ahead.
I have a similar thought. I don't think they're going to lose this weekend against Sheffield. I think they're going to smash Sheffield by like 4 or 5, beat Copenhagen midweek, but then they have City the weekend after, and I think they're going to get beaten handily, like 5-1 or 5-2 to City.
It could happen. I mean, you know, I agree with what Reese said. I think, you know, their fans, you know, after experiencing success for so long, they're probably getting really frustrated with Ten Hag and the board in general. And it's funny, I saw a clip today, and it was like one of their media people was like interviewing a kid. I don't know if I don't know if what was happening with the kid, but they were interviewing him and asking him like, oh, do you like Garnacho and stuff like that? He's like, I actually don't like him that much. And he's like, well, this is very awkward because we got you a Garnacho kit and they wish you the best. And so very, very weird. But I would say that only because, and I also don't like United, kind of like Reese, but with how Forest have been, Reese, or not Forest, with how, and I'd be disrespectful to Forest, with how Sheffield United has been playing recently, I'm not too confident in their ability to maybe beat anyone the rest of the season. Or no, they don't even have a win. They don't even have a win this season. They're with Burnley. They don't have a win to get really any points just because of everything that's been happening. So I think they will have much harder times after that, but they might be smelling a win this next time. So
here's the other thing about this game is a win masks all the problems, because I did not think they looked good in this game.
No, they did not.
I'm on Ten Hag fraud watch. Like, I don't understand the tactics, because they literally play like a relegation team. They defend and try and counterattack, and that's all they do. Like, they have chances, and that makes it seem like they should be scoring. But when you look at the quality of their chances, it's like all long shots. They cannot create high-quality chances in possession. They just hold possession and then take a random long shot. All of their high quality chances are on the break, which is fine. But like, it's fine if you're trying to be a mid-table team, right?
Like, they don't have the players that should be playing counter-attacking.
Yeah, they have Rashford.
Yes.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah.
I don't know where the pressing has gone, because when they press, they look decent.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's just injuries too. Because they do have a lot of injuries. So, I mean, Lindelof started at left back in this game. Because they don't have a fit left back at the club, not a single one.
Which is insane, because I feel like they've always had so many players in left back. But yeah, this was a tough game for Brentford to lose, especially after going head first. It saw a debut for Thomas Strakosha, their goalkeeper, and so he might feel a little bit hard done to let in two goals there at the end. But I think, you know, as good as they are, I think they're still struggling without Tony. There's been, like, you know, videos of Tony training and rumors as well of him leaving for maybe, I've heard Arsenal are interested. So a very weird time for Brentford, you know, just dealing without him. And, you know, it seems like they've been able to get results without him in the league so far this season, but it's not a hole to forget.
I genuinely think Brentford are going to have to just settle for mid-table, I think they need to cash in on Tony, to be honest, and just reinvest in the summer. I think the season's kind of predestined for them to just finish mid-table, cash in on Tony, and reinvest in the summer.
Which is not a bad thing, I think.
Yeah, for sure. But
cash in and then establish yourself with mid tape, I think, is a very smart move.
Yeah.
You can reset and try and advance again.
And the thing about it is that he probably would be worth so much money, because not only is he Premier League proven, but he's English. So
I'm hearing like 80 million.
But yeah. And that could be distributed among the squad in a good way. So yeah, it's just a tough one to take on the chin. But, you know, it was very much a freakish Man United moment, because literally in the first goal that McTominay scored was literally just being shot around the box a few times, and it finally got on the end of one and went in. So yeah, every team deals with stuff like that. Unfortunately, Brentford had to deal with that one, but we shall see if United lose to Sheffield United this next game week after international break. So we'll move on to my team real quick. Another 0-0, which, you know, I might complain like, we didn't look like we did anything. But considering the fact that we have two more injuries now, I'll take that, because I think Forrest looked very dangerous there at the end. And, you know, they brought in all these good players. The one critique I had for them is that they, well, it's not really a critique, more of a less that they have the good talent in the team to go on and move up in the table at some point, but they need that time to gel and get used to playing with each other. So that was the one takeaway I had for them.
Yeah, I only had two notes written down for this game. The one Palace note I had, I thought Raksaki looked pretty good.
Yeah, this was actually the first game I was impressed with him because, you know, obviously I have my complaints about Schlupp playing winger, but I don't want other players, especially in the first team, getting injured. But it gave a great stage for Raksaki to come on and play well, and I think he took a good chance, and maybe he'll start scoring more.
Presumably, considering the whole squad is in the hospital. But
right.
Yeah, I thought he had a good performance. I think Forrest might feel a little hard done by just because of the nature of the Gibbs White chance to hit the post. Yeah. But I think in the end, a draw is probably deserved because while that one's obviously the most clear cut hitting the post, y'all also had some chances. I think there was a Mateta chance near the end of the game.
Yeah.
Couple others from both teams. So I think, you know, draw a well thought draw from y'all. I think the other thing, and I think I said this to you, is that as long as you don't, and maybe I shouldn't even say it, maybe I shouldn't speak it into the universe, but I think as long as you don't start getting defensive injuries, you'll be able to play through this because it's not unpopular to say that y'all's defense has been one of your best aspects, if not your best aspect for, you know, probably the past decade.
Yeah. I mean, we have the most clean sheets in the league right now.
Yeah. So as long as you can maintain those players, I think you can, you'll be able to get through this, like, you know, curse of the Leicester curse.
Right.
But you know, that's a big F.
Yeah. And it definitely comes down to a lot of our attacking players getting injured at offset time. So obviously Olise and Franca getting back into training, and then we see Eze immediately get injured and be out for a few weeks. Edouard came back and looked pretty decent. Obviously we didn't score, but set up Mateta for a good chance, and Mateta's just an idiot sometimes. And someone called him Edward and not Edward because English, but I think I like what Reece said. I think we'll still be able to coast some of these games and get points here and there just because our defense is so well set up. And I think Johnson's really hit his stride. He talked in an interview recently about how it's been hard adjusting to life in London just because he's played for a lot of different clubs, but you know, London is something else. And he said he finally feels good and finally feels, you know, like he's been integrated in the team well. So I'm glad he's feeling good now. It'll just be interesting to see how we play these next few games and just hope our defense can keep it up a little bit. But let's move on to a really big game. So we had Brighton and Liverpool 2-2, fifth and sixth place last season, went up against each other today. Replay? Are we getting a replay? Liverpool didn't win, get a replay? No. I think it was a very interesting game as, you know, I feel like it doesn't happen too often. I feel like it hasn't happened in a while, but Alisson kind of got caught out and they were able to capitalize and put it in. So,
yeah, I don't really blame him though. It's very similar pass. Actually to Ramsdale. It was the Ramsdale one against Fulham this season where it's more of a defensive mistake while we're in the build-up, which similar to us, Liverpool and, you know, other teams like City and probably Brighton too, you know, the goalie pushes up with the build-up because they're playing out from the back. So if you turn the ball over, your goalie's in no man's land, right?
Yep. So, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it feels like Liverpool has to go behind to actually start playing good, especially recently. It feels like they're so comfortable with it being like 0-0 that they don't really push anything forward. And then once the other team scores, like, oh, yeah, we need to go forward and actually try to score. So you kind of saw that in the Tottenham game where, like, before Tottenham got out on the front foot, Liverpool were just kind of there defending and not really going forward very well.
Yeah. I don't know. I think this game too, I think both teams are actually really well matched in the way they play as well. They play very similarly, actually. I think what Liverpool does probably a little bit better is they're faster in transition, and I think they're better on the counter as well. I think Brighton may be a little bit better in possession just because they're so methodical, but Brighton also good in the counter, Liverpool also good in possession. So I think they really balance each other out. Liverpool, you know, again, maybe feel hard done by with the Gravenberch chance that hit the post, yes?
Yeah.
But similar story to the Palace one. You know, João Pedro having an open goal practically that he just didn't even get on target at the end of the game. So,
Yeah.
I think from a just neutral perspective, a tie is great to see because I think, you know, they really balanced each other out in this game for sure.
I think one thing that we could take away is that Brighton were still able to get a point with a lot of their players who they're used to starting sitting on the bench a little bit. So Lallana on the bench, Welbeck on the bench, Ansu Fati, who had a decent game in that bad performance against Villa, he stood out a little bit. And they had Carlos Baliba and then Adingra, who kind of sat on the bench for a second while Ansu Fati got to start for a little bit. So they're changing out the team a little bit. It's good to, or I won't say good because I'm a Palace fan, but it's good for them to rotate and still be able to perform.
Was it Adingra who scored the first goal, or was it somebody else?
It was Adingra.
Yeah, I thought he had a good game. He really impressed me. I think there's been moments or you know, previously in the season where he's, you know, just had specific moments, but this was the first one where I was like, yeah, it's a whole game that he played really well.
Yeah, and then they also had a first-time debut for Igor Julio, who is one of their defenders. I think this is a decent game to maybe not play him, but it ended up working out, and I think it's a good performance to take away and continue with Liverpool being a decent team and all. So I thought this was interesting. I went back and looked at our predictions for this season, and, you know, still early, but Josh and I had Liverpool finishing third and getting that Champions League spot, and Reese had Brighton finishing fourth and getting Champions League. So I wanted to ask, do y'all still agree with that?
No, I'd agree more with Reese's Brighton prediction than our Liverpool one.
Yeah, I think I'd probably stick with mine. I've been impressed by Liverpool at times, but there's just not a lot of consistency.
Mm-hmm.
Brighton, obviously they've had two randomly terrible results, right? Yeah. The Villa result and who else did they lose to? Kind of bad. I can't even remember, but they've scored in every game going back to like April of last year or something. Something stupid like that.
Mm.
At least one goal. So they're consistently scoring. I mean, they're chance creation monsters. They at least give them a chance, right? In every game. They're always making chances. I think they defend decently. A lot of their defense comes from just having the ball, right? They play with possession. So I just think as a team, where they are right now, I think they're going up. And I think Liverpool are already here, but they're going down. So I think at some point this season, they're going to meet and then go past each other.
I agree. But also Liverpool have done this a lot since they won the title, where they just look awful. Or not awful, but awful for Liverpool. And then they just have been there and done that and get consistent enough results at the end to squeeze into the top four. So I wouldn't be surprised if Liverpool sneak in the fourth, but I'd be more confident with Brighton just because also when Brighton lose like that, they always seem to learn a lesson from it, which I think a lot of managers really struggle to learn a lesson from a bad loss.
Right. And, you know, with the way I think, it's like Liverpool or Brighton could either get that last spot. I know, I think I predicted Newcastle to get a Champions League spot as well, but they're kind of a different story. They've been kind of struggling here and there, but still getting a few results. But I think it's more of just dealing with the fact that Tottenham probably will get Champions League just because of how they looked. So it's taking away one of those spots from the other three teams I just mentioned a second ago.
I think, you know, if I was going to adjust my top four right now, I think I had Newcastle in top four, right? Or did I not? I can't even remember.
I can go find out real quick.
It was us, City, somebody, Brighton.
I think you had for sure Brighton fourth.
Yeah.
Okay, here it is. You had Arsenal, City, Newcastle, Brighton.
Yeah, I think I'd drop Newcastle up for Spurs. I think I'd keep Brighton in there.
Okay. And Gage actually had Liverpool finishing second. So
yeah,
whenever he gets back on the podcast, we'll have to ask him about that. But yep, the season is continuing, and so we will revisit that question once we've got more games under our belt. But let's move on to an incredible win for the Gunners. Arsenal broke the losing streak of City going not having two consecutive losses, and it puts them above the team that ended up taking the title from them last season. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just so excited. I would have killed somebody to win this game. We haven't beaten City in 8 years in the league until this game. Another stat about Arteta, every team he's faced in the Premier League, he's beaten at least once, except for City, until this weekend. So finally knock them off the list. The other thing about getting a win against them is obviously we were in the title race with them last year, but we lost both our games against them. So there's still a feeling of invincibility surrounding them, right? It's like they'll drop points, but never to us. They're just we can't beat them. Mm-hmm. Now we've beat them in the Community Shield, which, you know, kind of a fake cup, but still start the season off. We've now beaten them in our first game in the league. Obviously they were without Rodri, without De Bruyne. So there's still caveats, but the fact that we've broken this curse is just so huge from a mental standpoint. And it's really good too, going into the break to still be tied with Tottenham on points and goal difference, actually.
Yeah. I think one thing to take away from this game is that even though they're missing some of these players, a lot of the players that are still performing, like Haaland, absolutely in the back pocket of William Saliba.
Yeah. So registered 0.00 XG in this game,
which doesn't happen a lot.
It's actually happened twice against us this year, because it happened in the Community Shield, which when that happened, I think I mentioned it either to y'all or on the podcast, but that was kind of with an asterisk because it was Community Shield. But it's happened again against the same center back pairing of Saliba and Gabriel. And yeah, Saliba's got his number right now. Just absolutely all over him. Hey, he had no chance in this game. And, you know, some of that, you're missing some creative output from De Bruyne, but they still got Phil Foden in the side. They still got Kovacic, who I've dogged on, but he's still an attacking-minded player. They've got good wingers, so it's not like he's completely isolated, right?
Right. One thing I wanted to bring up is that this lineup that y'all put out consisted of Nketiah and Jesus.
Yeah, I think mainly due to injuries, Jesus has been on the wing for the past few games, but I'm a fan, and he had an interview recently, and he basically said, you know, there was a period where he really wanted to insist on playing number nine. He was tired of being on the wing, and he's at the point now where he said he wants to do whatever he can to help the team, and I think he said he thanks God that he has the ability to play across the entire front three. He can play in all three positions, which, you know, I'm also thanking God, because Saka injury, Martinelli injury, back-to-back. Obviously, Martinelli back for this game, for the second half. But, yeah, I think Jesus will stay there as long as Saka is injured. I don't think Trossard's going to play out on the right side.
Gotcha. And Saka was on the bench. So is he?
No, he wasn't. He traveled with the team.
Oh, he was just sitting.
But he wasn't
sitting
in the squad.
He was just sitting.
Yeah, so there's actually supposedly the reason he was there was because we were trying to bait the media. And it kind of worked. Everyone thought he was going to play because he traveled, right? But the rumors and what I've seen on Twitter, which is, you know, the end-all be-all, right, is that we were annoyed last time about the leaks of him playing through his injury. And then also, if you remember, Thomas Partey's injury got leaked by the national team before us.
Mm-hmm.
And so not only did he travel with the squad, apparently we told Southgate that he would be able to play their last game, not their first game, which may still happen, but he was included in the national team. squad list, even though he's injured. So everyone thought he was going to play, and then, you know, not even in the squad for this game. Whether or not that's actually mind games, I don't know. I don't really think it matters either, but
you're 100% is. That seems like an Arteta thing. That just...
Yeah, I kind of believe it just because the way he is.
Yeah.
Sorry, you go ahead.
Well, I was just going to mention something about City. So, you know, obviously dealing with all these injuries is you know, brought down their performances a little bit. Obviously, De Bruyne, when fit, probably one of the best players in the Premier League. And then we've seen recently how integral Rodri is to that team. Pep started the likes of Rico Lewis. I'm not saying that Rico Lewis is a bad player, but 18, only a few appearances for Man City, most of them off the bench. Really interesting to see him start in a high-pressure situation like this when Arsenal are your direct title rivals. You know, and still missing out a few other players like John Stones was on the bench instead of, I think it was either Ruben Diaz and then Ake was their center back pairing.
Yeah.
And so I know he's great for them recently. And they ended up bringing on Doku and Nunez at some point. So really,
and John Stones.
And John Stones, that's right. So very interesting to see Rico Lewis, you know, starting and then bringing in those players on who probably could have handled the pressure better in a different way. But
and I mean, City will definitely feel that had they had their most fit squad there, they take this game. But I think, you know, Jorginho started this game for us. Right?
Right, yeah.
Saka's injured. So it's not like Martinelli didn't start the game. He came on because Trossard got injured.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like we're without injuries either. So I think this maybe is, you can take something, but obviously with all the injuries, it's hard to tell. I thought tactically, this is a great game to watch. First 20, maybe 30-ish minutes, I thought City were on top without a doubt. And maybe had they finished their first chance, their first really great chance early on, it's a different story. But they didn't. That's how it goes. And I think what was interesting is they weren't playing with inverted fullbacks, and neither were we. I was a little surprised to see. Then what ends up happening is Rico Lewis is pushed up really, really high, and the commentators were talking about it. They kind of formed this box. And they were completely dominating us until after about 30-ish minutes, Arteta did the exact same thing. And we matched their system one for one, pushing Declan Rice up a lot higher. Then the second half, I thought for sure, maybe even, I personally think we were on top for pretty much the whole second half. We decided to be aggressive and play with inverted fullbacks. And yeah, it definitely worked, especially... you know, Tomiyasu, I thought, had a great substitute appearance, obviously getting a part of the buildup. But, you know, there's a little bit, there's a clip floating around Twitter because immediately, and I don't mean like a few minutes, a few seconds before we score the winner, Arteta called, you can see him on the touchline. He says, Tommy, he yells at Tomiyasu and does this motion kind of in the direction of Havertz, saying, stick with Havertz. And then seconds later, Partey sprays a ball up. Tomiyasu's looking like he's playing striker, heads the ball down to Havertz, who chest controls, passes it off to Martinelli, shoots it. Like, I have to think this move is orchestrated. Like, it just looked too perfect, especially coming right after that, you know, seemingly tactical, whatever hand sign language stuff from Arteta. So yeah, tactically, it was a great game to watch. I thought Declan Rice was a monster in this game once again. He's making me eat my words about that North London Derby combined 11 week after week. Nothing against Bissouma either. I honestly could care less about the sending off as well. Bissouma's been phenomenal, but just week after week, I regret my decision. I feel like I've betrayed Arsenal, and I just watched Declan Rice play, and I'm like, man, you were so good. How could I ever say that against you?
He watches the episode.
I know.
He's making you eat your words.
I'm sorry. But yeah, I'm just so buzzed. Also, this is just kind of a fun fact. We made four substitutions in this game. Martinelli, Partey, Tomiyasu, Havertz. The goal was long pass from Partey to Tomiyasu to Havertz to Martinelli. All four substitutes linking up for the goal.
And a wonderful header from Nathan Ack.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. You take them how you get them.
Yeah.
We absolutely take those.
Yeah. For sure, a great game to watch. Nothing to take away from Arsenal's win, but both teams dealing with so many injuries at the moment. It's interesting to see how they ended up playing out with everything missing. I thought maybe one player that would have made an appearance at some point would be Grealish, but you know, I don't know what's going on with him and Pep at the moment. I don't know if he's getting any game time at all. I think he
just prefers Doku. Just more of an out-and-out winger, you would say. Just totally pace, totally dribbling, where Grealish kind of slows up play a little bit.
True. But I also feel like Grealish could have maybe won some fouls or something like that. Launch it into Haaland. But anyway, I'm not a manager. But maybe I should be, because I feel like Man City could have used me. But no. Nah. Anyway, great win for Arsenal. Reese absolutely chuffed at the bit.
Yeah.
Let's turn our attention to the championship. Josh, kind of tell us about the win against Stoke, the 2-0 win.
It was kind of a normal, at this point it's weird to say, but like a normal 2-0 domination of Stoke. Mm-hmm. Like normal with the last few rounds of play, we're continuing to look great. With especially going forward, where we transitioned to, there was a really good article in The Athletic by I forget his name, but he's the guy who writes for Leicester. I was kind of highlighting how it's basically we run a 3-2-5 going forward, and it's kind of crazy how much that has helped suck out the midfields of these low block teams and allowing our better players to attack their front five. But it kind of got me thinking that next, if we get promoted, assuming we do, that might be a challenge, because if you look at what Burnley's doing, where Burnley plays very distinct form of attacking football, we are playing a very distinct form of attacking football, and the quality is so much higher that I'm a little bit nervous to say next season would be comfortably safe for us, just because of how different the championship and the Prem are and how you have to attack those back fives to be a dominant team.
I do think y'all's squad is quite a bit better than Burnley's, though.
Yeah, that was one caveat I was thinking, was like our squad is significantly better, even if some players are on loan. I do like that we have not been playing Cassidy very much. I think it's important to play the lone players, but if we don't need to play them, like Cassidy,
you don't want to be too reliant.
Yeah, because he's not going to sign for us next season. There's zero shot that Chelsea are going to let him sign for us.
Yeah.
At most, we'll get him on loan again, but I don't really see the need for it. Iheanacho has looked good. Hoping we can keep him through the winter window. I think the one help we'll have with keeping him through that window is AFCON.
Yeah.
I think that will derail a lot of players leaving. I also think we need to sign Ndidi to give him another chance in the championship as being basically an entirely new player. We basically got a new player for free under Maresca, because he does not play how he has ever played in his career. Like, he's completely different side of the – completely different part of the midfield, and has just looked incredibly different and incredibly good, and I really hope we don't lose him all free at the end of the year.
I had a question about Leicester that I thought was kind of interesting. We're now take a trip with me into an alternate universe where this current Leicester squad is in the Premier League. Where are you finishing this season? Because I just think new manager, the way the squad is, the way you're playing right now, y'all are way better than you were last year.
I think the one thing that will pull us back is the goalkeeping situation. I don't think we completely solved that. And not to sound over cocky, but just based on how we have played, I think we would be 8th or 9th, because also Dalco would still be playing, which would add another layer to striker, because we would have the money to pay the clause to Salzburg. But I think we would be in the top half comfortably, but not necessarily pushing for a European spot.
Okay.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I was like looking at it as well. Like, so many of the players who kind of had a not the best end of the, or just last season in general, but like already stepping up and doing well in the championship. I know Jamie Vardy's getting up there in age, but 3 out of 37, and he's played 11 and has 4 already this season. So kind of like walk me through like how some of the players who you've had in the Premier League are doing now.
Let me look at this. So obviously Vardy, him, I would say he would be the one caveat I have to. I don't think he'd be playing very much at all. I think he'd be playing in our cups just because he is such an older player that he, it's not there anymore. As much as I love him, his contract ends at the end of this season, and the club he owns in New York is
Right.
starting, reopening. Rochester FC is starting next season, so I think it is a pretty good shoe-in for him to go play in America. Dewsbury Hall, I think, just developed. He looks amazing, and under a competent manager who's allowing him to play, he looks amazing. Like, I have zero doubt that if he stays through the winter window, which I don't think he's going to leave, he will be the player of the championship by far. I think Iheanacho still has issues with putting the shot on goal, but obviously playing against lower talent has been helping a lot. I think same thing for Vestergaard. Vestergaard, I think, thrives in the championship because it's a lesser talent, and him being slower than Christmas does not, like, that makes a huge difference.
I always forget they all have him.
Yeah, but he's been playing so much, and Shuter, I think, has looked great, but I also think he's been allowed to develop. I think Pereira has looked, I like Pereira with his injuries coming through the inside a little bit more than I like him going down the outside. So having him as an inverted fullback or even sliding into that deep line playmaker role alongside Ndidi or Winks is, I think, is a pretty good asset to have with his skill set, but also with the risk of knowing what one more knee injury will do to a player like him. James Justin, I feel like it's hard to talk about just because he has not played for us in so long. Just and another player whose knee injuries probably derailed his entire career.
Yeah.
And then FaZe, similar to the other center backs, just looks better because we're playing worse teams, but also just seems to be developing a little bit more. I think that's everyone who's at least like generally has been playing and not been injured.
Now, you don't have to say why. I just want you to give me your top three performers right now.
Dewsbury Hall is one. Gonna put Mavi Adidi in at three, and then I'm gonna put in Adidi second just because of how much he had to change who he is as a player, because that's such a rare thing too, like to go from someone who literally would fill in when we were having injury problems, would fill in at center back, like to go and play an advanced eight or a deep line playmaker
It
there.
reminds me of Xhaka a little bit, actually, because he was like our left back replacement when we had injuries there.
Yeah, that is kind of that was the only thing that I think is relatively close. Because it just doesn't happen. That is such like a far-fetched for someone who is so good at one position to just transition to that.
Right. Well, I gotta say, other than Josh, we are all super excited for Lester to be doing so well right now, just so we can have him back in the Premier League and have him amongst the results. So I think that wraps up all of our Premier League coverage. Josh, what is the jersey of the week?
So when this comes out, the NHL season would have started 2 days ago. And I
Yep.
don't think I've ever had my favorite team on as jersey of the week. So this is my first hockey jersey. It is a 2017 Stadium Series Flyers jersey. It's got an awesome patch on it from when we played in Pittsburgh. But yeah, it's got Tyler Shen on the back, who has not played for us since the 2017 season. But love that jersey. It has now been an alternate since then, and just love it. I think Stars also play the day this episode is coming out, so hockey is back, and we are all very excited.
Exactly. I almost wore my Stars jersey. I should have, but gotta rep the passport Palace jersey. But we'll go to my album of the week. This is not a new album I got for my birthday. This is one I've had, but it made me laugh because last night I was listening to music and I totally forget about them, but they're really one of my favorites. And it's they're probably a good reason of to why I'm gonna have shitty hearing or do have shitty hearing, and I'm gonna have tinnitus for the longest time. But Van Halen, this is their second album. Play 'em loud, play 'em proud. I have a funny memory with this album. I say this knowing full well that I'm gonna get it in the mail, but I had jury duty 2 summers ago, and the day I found, or like I had the day before I had to go, they told me I was like I didn't have to go. And I blasted this so loud that the neighbor texted me and said to turn it down. So, I picked this not because I started listening to them again, but being that they're Dutch and there's a song on here called Somebody Get Me a Doctor. It just made me think of Jarl Riedewald when he got hurt in the Palace game recently, just because he's Dutch and everyone is getting injured right now. So I think that was fitting. So, yeah. That is my album of the week. And I think that concludes our coverage of this episode. Thankfully, I think Gage will be back with us soon. I hope I did okay to step in for him. But yeah, Reese, thank you for... you bitch. I'm ignoring you now. But thank you for being with me today, Reese.
Of course, yeah. We appreciate you hosting. We've got to get Josh to host now because I was telling Ethan... I think the last time Gage missed was maybe 19 or 2020, because it was when I was still in Memphis and I hosted that episode. So now we've had two of us fill in for Gage. So now yeah. Josh has got to do it.
The next one I'll do.
Nice. It's good to know that we can continue even with on Gage, even though it's hard to continue emotionally. Josh, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for having me. This is going to be my last episode until like mid-November. Work is going to get really, 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 really crazy for the next few weeks. So I'm going to be gone until probably like mid to early November, depending on a couple different things.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're dealing without Gage this episode, but we'll miss Josh for a few weeks until he comes back in November for the turkey month. So be sure to follow us on all of our social media platforms. We continue to put out reels and try to put a smile on your face, try to make them a little goofy, but yeah. And check out the new website as well. We got that up and running. We'll make sure to develop it a little bit more, but still looking good right now. Thanks to Reese.
Slapcastbl.com.
Thank you for the URL. And I appreciate y'all for being with me today, being the host and everything. I'm glad we were able to continue without Gage. We hope y'all enjoying the Premier League, and we love you. And it's a goodbye from us.